So you're with the Resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 72. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about the Guardians of the Wills, Baze Malbus and Chira Emwe. As always, I'm Mikey B, joined by my co-host, Caitlin.
Hello.
Welcome, Caitlin. If you want to get involved in the conversation, you guys can get a hold of us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast. Leave a comment on our Facebook page. Send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. As always, today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free, including Inferno Squad, which I'm currently listening to and I think is kind of awesome. Also, you can get the new Star Wars books that's based on Princess Leia, or Phasma, that's coming out soon, in the Road to the Last Jedi. So there's some definitely cool things. If you've ever used Audible, check it out, audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. If you have used Audible before but decided not to join, if you haven't done a free trial in a year, you can still use our free trial. Just get a free book on us. Just make sure you cancel so you don't get charged or anything like that. But if you do decide to sign up, awesome. Anyway, off to you, Caitlin.
Okay, so if you, we've launched a Patreon. You can check it out at patreon.com/resistantradiopodcast. Some of the perks include our Discord chat, recording studio, movie nights, and After Dark episodes. Also, right now, our first episode of our After Dark episode is up for everyone to download. It's called Potter Wars, where we discuss Star Wars 40th and Harry Potter's 20th anniversary. Can't afford to support us via Patreon? We also have merch for sale. T-shirts and buttons packs are available on our website.
Awesome. Now, I will say the Patreon Discord chat is probably my favorite thing for Patreons. Not only has it turned into nonstop Star Wars conversation, but Donnie has added a hockey channel. So if you're a hockey fan, if you haven't figured it out, we have quite a few hockey fans here on Resistance Radio. And there's also a Voltron Spoilers channel.
Yes.
I haven't finished watching all of the new season on Netflix yet, but there's definitely a lot of fun things to communicate and talk to with friends and family members and all the fun stuff here in Discord, obviously. So definitely go and check it out at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. All right, moving on to the news. So the first bit of news is actually something that doesn't really surprise me. I have been, this has been a dream of mine for a while. Donald Glover didn't need to do any research for Star Wars. Now, that might come off sounding like, well, why wouldn't he do research? Unlike some of the other people doing it, Donald Glover said he grew up with Star Wars. He loves it. He knew all the things about Star Wars. So there's people on the movies who didn't grow up with Star Wars, but him, I know everything about Star Wars. I didn't have to do any research. I just love that. Like I said, I wanted Donald Glover to be Lando before they announced it, and it's perfect. Like, he is the perfect Lando for this. So, like I said, I'm very optimistic about the Han Solo film. What do you think about this, Danya? Or, Danya's not even here. What do you think about this, Caitlin? Sorry, I'm so used to Danya being here. Oh my gosh.
She's here in spirit. She's a force ghost.
She is. She's here in spirit. So what do you think about this, Caitlin? Oh my gosh, I'm sorry.
I'm not surprised. And I'm like that. To be honest, he's what I'm probably most excited for the Han Solo movie.
I'll agree with you on that. Like, I think I'm probably most excited for Lando showing up. I don't know how much he'll be in the film, but I'm excited for him.
I will not be pleased if he's like just like a cameo or random bits here and there.
Well, I can't imagine him just being like random bits or anything like that. He did talk about how he didn't have to do any research for the role, but he did get a chance to meet Billy Dee Williams, which was really interesting because he talked about it, about the conversation he had with Billy Dee. And I remember months ago we talked about the photo that sneaked from, the Instagram photo of the guy who took a picture of himself with, Donald Glover and Billy Dee in the background in the booth. So he did talk about it was really nice just to see, he went to lunch with him and we were able to do that and kind of get a little bit more. But I feel like he is the natural progression as a young Lando Calrissian. So I'm excited.
Well, I feel he kind of sounds like every Star Wars fan where he just like almost like verbal vomit all the information he knows about Star Wars. And then true to Lando, he was just like, nah, you don't need to worry about that. Just be charming.
Yeah, that's kind of like, yeah, so, you know, it's just what it is. You know, he let me ramble on and on. It was fun. Like, so what do you think? He goes, yeah, I don't know all about that. Just be charming. And that's exactly it. Like, it is what Billy Dee was. He was like, hello, what have we here? Like, he was super smooth. And that's what, like, Donald Glover is going to be. He's just going to be, like, super smooth, like, almost to a cheesy effect. Because that was Lando. Like, he was, like, really cheesy. Like, the thing about it, look at his outfit compared to, like, Han. Like, Han was, like, trousers, shirt, vest, somewhat functional. Lando had trousers, really poofy shirt, cape, like, super slicked back hair. Like, come on, like, he's like, and, okay, and that pencil mustache. Like, come on, that's just absolutely awesome.
And maybe I'm slow on the uptake. Have you watched Community?
Oh, yeah, I know. I love Community. Like, Troy okay. and Abed in the morning. Like, I love Community. I loved him. I watched Atlanta.
Do you remember when it was, I think, yeah, it was one of the paintball episodes where Abed decides that he's Han Solo?
Mm-hmm. No, yeah. And it's
Trey is now the Lando.
He is. They've you know, become paired together. It was destiny for a while. Like I said, I was expecting this for a while. I was hoping it, and sure enough, when they announced it, I was like, I knew it. So this doesn't really surprise me. He's a Star Wars geek through and through, and guess what? He's living out all of our dreams as being in the Star Wars film as one of the really cool characters. Anyway, moving on. Let's go ahead and move on to the next bit of news. This is actually a really cool bit of news that just came out. Is EW Entertainment Weekly has released new covers for the latest issue, which is the Last Jedi covers. There's a really cool cover of Rey and Luke, and they're going to continue to release a few more of the rest of the characters. Next week is going to be, if I remember correctly, I'm looking at it right now, is going to be Finn and Rose. And actually, what is interesting, I believe, I'm looking at it here, we got Rose's last name in this article. It's going to be Rose Tico. T-I-C-O is her last name, because we've only known her first name, so we now have her last name. So the next issue is going to be Rose and Finn, and then there, they didn't kind of go into further, but we'll have Leia and Poe, and then we'll also have some of the villains, is what they said. So I'm excited to see these covers, and I will say, the really cool part is the Luke cover, like, don't get me wrong, like, the Rey cover is, like, beyond awesome. Like, her outfit, she's holding the lightsaber in, like, a defensive form and everything, and I'm, like, super geeked out about it. But the Luke one is just like, it's kind of like
his eyes pierce my soul.
It's kind of like that, because it's essentially like, if you have the, remember the first poster they had of The Last Jedi, the red poster with Luke's face and, you know, Rey in the middle, and then you have Kylo on the other side. So you know how it's like half face? The original poster for The Last Jedi that came out, right? It's that picture of Mark Hamill of Luke. But it's in color. So you have his face kind of shrouded. There's light like right there where you see both his eyes, his nose, his beard, which is a beautiful beard for an older Luke. Like, it is awesome. And it, like you said, it pierces your eyes. Like, I can just imagine, like, who... And of course, the title of the article is like, who is the Last Jedi? And you're just all like, oh my gosh, who is this going to be? Like, I'm just so excited for these covers and for The Last Jedi coming up soon. But definitely check it out. We'll have a link in our show notes about this. But I'm excited for these. What do you think of the Rey one? I know I kind of glossed over it, Caitlin.
Oh, no. It was totally awesome, and I probably stared at that for a good 5 minutes.
Yeah, I will say, I think I know someone on Reddit's going to do this, or I'm going to have to take the time. I would love these to be like iPhone wallpapers if there wasn't text everywhere. Like, yes. I want, because, like, the Rey one is just absolutely awesome. Like, that's a phone wallpaper. The Luke one is just, like, it's just epic. And I would love to see, like, all of them put together, something like that. Because I'm really excited to see what they do with Rose. Because, again, she's a new character. I'm excited to see her. But also, I want to see Poe and Leia. Because, again, it is about Carrie Fisher's last official appearance, or final appearance, as
Leia. Well, and because they talk about there's a... details of late Carrie Fisher's final appearance as Leia Organa, with a story from Poe Dameron co-star Oscar Isaac that will make you miss her even more than you do now, if that's possible. I'm like, how is that possible?
Well,
like,
you know, it's funny.
I don't want to cry.
Well, you know what's interesting, and I didn't put it in the news. There's an article floating around somewhere, and if I can find it, I'll link to it at some point. But an article about John Boyega talking about the legacy of Carrie Fisher and how he misses her also. Like, there's been a lot of, obviously, production has wrapped and they're finishing a post-production right now in The Last Jedi. So our cast is kind of wind down any other projects they're working on and getting ready for the media, you know, kind of storm that's going to be brewing for The Last Jedi, obviously. And there's a lot of different things coming up that you've seen articles, and a lot of it revolves around Carrie Fisher. I think it's because, and I know Danya, I wish Danya was here to kind of, you know, talk a little bit about this, but she was such a big part, not only to Star Wars, but to so many people as a hero and someone who pushed a lot of boundaries. And she was very open and honest about her struggles and what she did to overcome them. So it's one of those things where the article that John Boyega said, I think it came out beginning of last week or middle of last week after we had recorded the show, but it was talking about how he learned so much from her and he's going to miss her immensely on the next film because he won't have someone to throw, you know, spitball ideas off and her just be almost truthful to a fault, you know, like very blunt and just be like, you know, like that.
No
like
he's filter.
Like, yeah, no filter. And that was her, like, to the T. And every story you have has her doing something similar to that, which I can see how she will be missed very big on the next film and obviously in life and everything she does. So I am excited to see what EW has, because I will say Oscar Isaacs, I'm sure, has some amazing stories, but that teaser really is I miss
Carrie just have Fisher. The tissues ready.
I know, it's like I'm already missing it. And, but that comes out tomorrow, so it came out couple days if you're listening to this on Sunday. If you're listening to it live or on Patreon, it'll be tomorrow, Thursday, the 10th, it'll be out, the article with Carrie Fisher and Oscar Isaac. Anyway, moving on, we have an interview with Laura Dern. Laura Dern was on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. And of course, I don't think any Star Wars actor or actress can go on any show, even if they're not promoting Star Wars at the time, can get on a show and not be asked a Star Wars question. Like, I think it's just, Star Wars is so universally, you know, renowned and known and usually loved by most people. Not everyone, but a lot of people. It's one of those things where, of course, she's on there and she was asked, can you tell us anything about Vice Admiral Holdo? And, of course, they are sworn to secrecy by Lucasfilm and Disney. And I wish they could tell us a little bit, but they couldn't. But she did respond with, I can tell you that I love her. So we don't really know much about Laura Dern's character, Vice Admiral Holdo, other than she loves the character, which is cool. Like I'm okay with just getting that information. Her character looks very, very I'll say this: her character looks very regal in a lot of the shots that we've seen. I will say though that she did reveal that there's an action sequence she's part of where she got to use a space weapon in her hand. She didn't say if it's a blaster or something else, but she did say that she felt like she was back in her room as an 8-year-old doing scenes, and she went pew pew. And I guess I can tell you, you know, she says she didn't realize she was saying pew pew, but that's the same thing that happened with, you know, John Boyega on The Force Awakens holding the lightsaber. He was making the lightsaber sounds. Like, I can imagine every scene. Like, I think it's just like probably assumed by the cast and crew that you're going to end up making the sound effects yourself, because obviously they're not really there at some point during the filming. What do you, you know, would you make the sound effects, Caitlin?
I'm not sure, because, like, I've mentioned this before, my brother had, like, he had multiple different types of lightsabers, like the toys, and some of them actually made noises themselves, and they would make the same noise, like, if you hit it against something, it would make the same noise, like, as it would during a lightsaber fight in the movies. So I never really had to, imagine it or make it myself, because they did it for us. We were spoiled that way.
Okay, I get that. Like, I'll take that. But yeah, I don't know. I grew up with it in the maybe I'm telling my age. I'm not that old. Maybe I am.
Yeah, you're not. I think you're like 2, maybe 3 years older than me at the most. So.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I made my own lightsabers and stuff too. So I was kind of use the imagination for everything. But if I was on set, I'd be like, zoom, zoom, you know, making the sound effects for lightsabers and shooting stuff. But it's nice to know that there'll be an action sequence with her, and I want to watch to see if they kept any of the scenes where she mouths the sound effects.
Yeah,
because there are a couple scenes in The Force Awakens where you see Finn going, you can see him making the sound effects of the lightsaber, because obviously they were the best takes. But You can't hear him.
Well, and I personally, I felt like she was channeling me when she's like, when she's talking about being on set and realizing like it was Star Wars, and then she's like, I could cry. Literally, I'm like, oh my God, that's R2-D2. And I'm like, yeah, that's probably where I would start freaking out too.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Like when you see stuff like that, like I guess you're right. Like she's freaking out seeing R2-D2 in real life. I don't know. If you go to any of the conventions, there's the R2 Builders Club that makes life-size R2-D2s. And if you've never gotten a chance to see one, I would encourage you to go to one of your local Comic-Cons where there's the 501st visiting or something like that, and see a real-life R2-D2. Even though it's not the one used in the movie, these guys do some amazing work. Or just Google R2 Builders Club, and like you'll see guys that spend a bunch of time making a real-life R2-D2. Like They're really cool to see.
I think it's more just than just meeting R2-D2. It's the fact she's on set for Star Wars.
Yeah, and that's what it is. It's like it's the surreal life.
Yeah, and if you give yourself the moment to actually acknowledge where you are, then you're going to have that emotional reaction. Whereas if you just kind of go through with it and recognize it afterwards, then it that all depends on how you react to something. Or at least in my experience, that's how it's been. So.
Yeah, I just put a link in our Discord chat for astromech.net, which is the official R2-D2 Builders Club. There's a forum, you can take a look at it. There's Siri, pictures and stuff like that. And there's even a Wikipedia that they have on questions on how to build it.
There it is.
Yeah, so if you are interested in making your own R2-D2, visit astromech.net. And if you decide to build one, let me know. I will have you build a second one for me. Anyway, moving on to our last bit of news that we have. This last bit's actually pretty interesting. We have two bits of news.
I was going to say there's more.
I know. I don't pay attention to my own notes because that's me. So the next bit of news is actually really cool. I'm really excited for this because there's actually a Sperry store down the street from me. So Sperry is releasing a new line of Star Wars-inspired shoes. And can I tell you how much I love these? Just mainly because I am a person who doesn't like shoelaces, and these are all slip-on Sperry shoes. I will say I feel like the Chewbacca shoes, well, actually, no, they're not all slip-on, but there's a good set of them are. But I will have to get the Chewbacca slip-ons. Like, oh my gosh, having Chewie on your shoe is just going to be awesome.
See, I like the X-Fighter and the droids. Yeah. C-3PO and R2-D2.
Yeah, so the X-Wing and the Luke and Vader fight, that's actually the original Ralph McQuarrie art. So that goes back to the original artwork that was done by Ralph McQuarrie before A New Hope was made. So those are actually really cool. My only problem with those shoes, the X-Wing and the Luke and Vader fight, is it's white, and I feel like it will get really dirty. Like, here's the thing. Yeah. Like, with shoes, I know there's a thing like shoe heads. And if you're a shoe head, please correct me on some of this stuff. Like, let me know when I'm wrong on Twitter, and I will, bow my head in shame. But I know people who wear the shoes like once or twice to keep them like in pristine condition. I can't justify buying shoes and just having them on show, like for me, because shoes are meant to be worn. Because one, if they're really cool looking, I want to wear them and show them off. Like, that's just my personality. Now, toys, like, don't get me wrong, I'll put toys up on shelves and have them in my office and stuff like that and show them off. But so the really cool part is there's the Ralph McQuarrie ones that are white, and one shoe, your right shoe, is going to be the X-Wing going down the Death Star trench. The other one is the original Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker artwork, which is really cool. It's the Luke with like the mask. I believe it's the original drawing that they used for Bespin. And then as you go further down the different ones, there's Chewie and Han. As much as I love Han Solo, I'm sorry, I'm going to prefer my right shoe with Chewbacca. And then you have the droids, which is C-3PO R2-D2. And then you have two lace-up shoes, a Rebel Alliance one, which is orange with the Rebel symbol. And then you have a black one that has the Imperial logo on it. Those shoes go on sale August 10th. And you can check them out. Yep, they go on sale tomorrow, for the day we're recording this, on Sperry's website or in the Sperry stores. So that's going to be pretty cool. Unfortunately, right now, they don't go ahead and tell us how much it's going to cost. Yeah. If this is anything like the original tie-in with the Stormtrooper hoodie from Mark Echo, that original hoodie was like $150. So we'll see what happens. But if they're reasonably priced, I will gladly go ahead and buy a pair. And we have one of our Patreon listeners saying, since there's no price listed, that means they're expensive. I agree. Yeah, they're probably
priceless.
They're priceless. They're wonderful. Anyway, moving on from fancy shoes. Danya is actually here in our chat, and she says she likes Dano's custom shoes better. So, sorry, hashtag sorry, not sorry. So, if you want custom shoes, Dana, one of our co-hosts, may be willing to make them for you, but he only does them by request. Anyway, moving on to the last bit of news for this is Disney is set to release a special Star Wars holiday experience this holiday season. It's going to be a Star Wars VR. They teamed up basically with ILM X Labs to bring a very unique experience. This is basically, let me see if I can pull up all the details here. They've combined the magic of illusions, advanced technology, and virtual reality to create a fully immersive social experience that takes guests to new worlds. A truly transformative experience is so much more than what you'll see with your eyes. It's what you hear, feel, touch, and even smell with the power of the void. Guests who step into Star Wars, Secrets of the Empire, won't just see the world, they'll know they're part of of this amazing story. So Star Wars, Secrets of the Empire is going to be released this holiday season. And you'll be able to see this at Florida, Disney World Resorts, and Disneyland Resorts in California. I'm assuming it's going to coincide with the release of the film, or at least like in that same time frame. Does that make sense?
It does to me.
That would make sense. You know, obviously, as they lead up to the release of The Last Jedi, there's going to be some really cool stuff. But I will say that definitely looks, Secrets of the Empire looks really cool. It's not just a virtual reality experience. It's being dubbed as a hyper reality experience. It looks like a VR meets laser tag type thing. At least the artwork for it does. Let me post it here so you can see it. You can see it. So it's interesting. I do like that the artwork includes people like K2SO. So I feel like it's going to combine like the original trilogy with like some of the Rogue One stuff and just different things. It looks like from the artwork that it's going to take place on Mustafar. So that should be kind of cool. Something, you know, Secrets of the Empire, I guess, is something to do with Darth Vader's castle that we learned in Rogue One. What do you think about this, Caitlin?
Okay, well, now that I know where it's supposed to take place,
I'm guessing because I see his castle, the Citadel, in the background, like in the back left corner. There's a TIE fighter. There you are with your little goofy, like in the left corner, you see the guy with the little goofy VR headset on and a little blaster. So I feel like
when I was reading the article and they mentioned about smells, all I can think is I would not want to do this in Jabba's palace.
Well, yeah, I don't think you'll want to do it in Jabba's palace, but I think it'll be interesting to have this in. I think this. If this is in like a room that there's hyper, they call it a hyper reality. So it's not just virtual reality. So I'm assuming it'll be like in a set room that has, points and stuff that they'll measure you. And I'm sure your gun will play a point in them tracking where you're at. And as you move around, look at stuff, shoot, stormtroopers down and stuff like that. Like they'll probably release smells. Like I can imagine it'd be kind of a sulfur smell with the lava or something like that.
If you live an experience where something happens, like what happened to Anakin right before he turns into Darth Vader, the smell of burning flesh is not something else I look forward to either.
I would not want the fake burning flesh. But I think what will happen is you'll probably have like heat come through, like, because it's a hyper reality. So it's going to mix like the Disney, practical effects. If you've ever saw like Honey, I Shrunk the Audience or
Bug's Life at Animal Kingdom.
Yeah, so Bug's Life at Animal Kingdom or California Adventure, where you have a little spray, which will be water sprayed on you, and which is snot usually or something like that. You'll have air things be like the bugs biting your feet and stuff like that. So I feel like you'll have like hot air or something like that to make you feel like you're on most of air. It won't be excessively hot like lava, but it'll be something fun.
Yeah, or like because I think at one point they have a stink bug go off, and so they release like a sulfur. Yeah.
So I'm sure we'll have something like that again. It's not just virtual reality. It looks like it is a virtual reality type thing, but they're dubbing it hyper reality. The really cool part is they say it promises to plunge fans into the Star Wars universe. And we've seen a couple ILM XLab stuff. And if you go to our Facebook page, there is a video of Danya trying the Trials of Tatooine, which was done by ILM XLabs, the lightsaber VR. I think she did it at Celebration a year and a half ago. So it's pretty funny to watch Danya. She's not here to defend herself, flail around. Oh,
but in the chat, though.
It's all right, but she doesn't know what we're saying.
that is true.
She does know what we're saying, and it's on our Facebook page, so she can't deny it, and she doesn't know what I'm saying now. Anyway, anything else about Secrets of the Empire?
No.
No. I think we're good with that. Here's the last bit. Here's another tagline that I think is really good. By combining Lucasfilm storytelling expertise with cutting-edge imagery and immersive sound from the team at Skywalker Sound, while invoking all the senses, we truly hope to transport all those who experience Star Wars Secrets of the Empire to a galaxy far, far away. I can't wait to go. I'm excited. I'll be in California in January, so hopefully it's still there. Anyway.
Oh, I didn't realize it was only a short-lived thing.
Yeah, I don't know how long it'll be there, but I know, obviously they're trying to do something to to beef up the Star Wars, land and everything and just keep people hyped about it and everything. So I'm okay with it. But moving on to our spotlight topic, we have two characters we're focusing on. Our Guardians of the Wheels, Mr. Baze Malbus and Chira Emwe. So I wanted to go ahead and do these two together because I don't think it's easy to do one without talking about the other, regardless of people's opinions. I know. Well, first of all, we'll just throw this out there. Caitlin, do you think there's some type of romantic relationship between Baze and Churrit?
I like to think there is.
Okay.
But so I'd also like them to come out and say it, but they won't.
Yeah, see, I don't think there is. And I've rewatched Rogue One more than I like to admit. I'll admit it. I've watched it way too many times.
I was going to say
probably about 50 times. I got my daughter. What's really funny is my daughter actually likes the sounds from Rogue One. So I've watched that more than any of the other films. I've only been able to watch Force Awakens with her twice, but I've watched Rogue One six or seven times with her. And so she really likes the sounds from Rogue One. I don't know if it's the music. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe she is. Maybe she's just ready to go. She's ready to rebel at 6-7 weeks right now. But I've watched it enough and I've read the Rogue One novel and I've read through Guardians of the Wheels. I don't see there being a relationship between them. And I'm actually glad that you do want there to be one because I know that's a strong point Danya has. So I do want to have the counterbalance of it. So like I said, these two characters are so much combined so much. They're so intertwined, at least story-wise and what we know about them. So as we go through our Rogue One characters, these two are definitely joined together. But I do want to talk a little bit about the Guardian of the Wheels, the kind of religion that these two are from before we get into it. So the Guardian of the Wheels was a religious order active in the city of Jedha at the beginning of the age of the Galactic Empire, I guess. They kind of died at the end of as the Empire came up. They traditionally used the handcraft light bow, which is what we saw Churrit use in the film, whereas obviously Baze kind of got rid of his and switched to a less elegant weapon of choice. And they were protectors of the ancient Temple of the Kyber. The Guardians who were forced to live on the streets when the Empire occupied Jedha in search of Kyber crystals, and they stripped the temple bare of its many treasures, where they nonetheless remained true to their beliefs by preaching to the citizens about the Force. So, interestingly, if you don't know much about Star Wars lore, though, in the early drafts of A New Hope, the name Wills referred to what eventually became known as the Force. So it was really interesting when Rogue One came out that they actually referenced Guardians of the Wills and they talked about the Force that way. And also in Revenge of the Sith, in an unfilmed scene between the spirit of Qui-Gon Jinn telling Yoda how he learned the secrets of becoming a Force ghost, which we see there, from a shaman of the Wills, which again is tied to the Guardians of the Wills, the original George Lucas lore. And that information about Revenge of the Sith comes from the script book, if you get the Revenge of the Sith script book, which is actually really cool. So it's really interesting that, we've brought in this lore of the Guardian of the Wills and the Temple of Kyber and all these things that they believe in this religion. So the reason I start with that is because I think that's a good way to understand framing base and church relationship. They are partners in a religion, which, you know, if they do have a romantic relationship, awesome. I would love for them to announce it and then move forward with a, you know, that be the official, you know, I guess that would be the first Star Wars same-sex relationship that's official canon, if they did announce it. But at this point, I feel like it is purely a religious relationship that they have, and they're holding on to it because they've spent so much of their life together. What do you think about the Guardian of the Wills and their relationship?
Well, because when I was reading the articles, by the sounds of it, they were friends before they even joined. So I think it was just childhood friendship, and they both just, well, the way I picture it in my mind, so it's not canon, was Churrit wanted to join the Guardians of the Wills, and Baze probably is like, well, I got nothing better else to do, or somebody's gonna watch out over you, I might as well join as well.
Yeah, I don't know. I would feel like...
But like I said, that's my head canon. That's not true canon.
Yeah, you know, I feel like it was kind of, you know, I feel like they kind of joined because he did believe in it. Like, you see it at the end of Rogue One, especially with Baze, like, you know, you hear in the beginning of the film, Churrit says, this guy has lost all of his belief. You know, like, so at some point, Baze did believe in the Force. And yeah. it's really important to state, and this was something that I knew was speculation when we did our Rogue One episode. When we had the big cast, you know, we had a lot of people on and everything. But I had to make it really really clear that neither Baze nor Churrit are Force sensitive. Neither one are. That's official canon from Paula Hidalgo and the story group that's on StarWars.com and the data bank. Like, neither of them are Force sensitive at all. Just because they're not Force sensitive doesn't mean they can't believe in the Force. Remember, the Force guides and surrounds everything. So just because they can't see it doesn't mean that they don't believe that the Force is guiding them to do something. And that it wasn't guiding them.
Like, I understand it's canon that they don't, but I feel like some of the things that Churrit senses is a little bit more than just
training
or instinct. So he may not be like the same level as Maz, but I feel like he does understand it more than, like, I don't know how to explain it, because I know that they said that he's not Force sensitive, but there is something else going on that he can pick up more than just instinct and training from the Guardians. Like, when he, being a Guardian of the Wills and being at the Kyber Temple, like, he obviously can know and feel and sense what a Kyber crystal feels like, so that's how he could pinpoint the one that Jin was wearing.
Yeah, so here's the thing I'll tell you this, is, so this is the data bank, this is the official Star Wars blurb about Churrit Emwe, is... Churrit Emwe, deeply spiritual, Churrit Emwe believes all living things are connected through the Force. His sightless eyes do not prevent him from being a highly skilled warrior. Though he lacks Force abilities, this warrior monk has rigorously honed his body through intense physical and mental discipline. And I guess maybe if you interpret he lacks Force abilities, maybe he is Force sensitive, but he lacks the ability to control it. Maybe it's like, this comes back to midichlorians, which I wish Johnny was here, because then this would be an actual an actual scientific reason why he can do certain things and he can't do other things. Maybe he has an elevated number of midichlorians, but not quite enough to be like, if you look at like a Jedi has to have 100 midichlorians or more to be able to be a Jedi so they can actually use the Force and tap into it to manipulate it. Maybe Churrit has like 85, so he's not quite to that level, but he's got some sensitivity. Does that make sense? Like, he lacks Force abilities. The quote is, he lacks Force abilities. Doesn't mean he lacks any sensitivity whatsoever. So maybe that's it.
The other way you can think of it is not the quantity, but the type of midichlorians. Maybe there's different types.
There's just one. Because Yoda only has so many, and then Anakin had over 20,000.
Yeah, but
so.
Maybe they were referring to the one that, like...
See, now we're going so far beyond that. Like, we're focusing on canon here, and we're arguing the line here. Though he lacks Force abilities, lacking Force abilities without necessarily being able to... And I like it, so... I think we have from our Discord, Brackus said, I think people can perceive the Force without necessarily being able to manipulate it. So maybe that's it. So maybe he lacks any force abilities, but he still has some sense of it. I'm going to say that Chirrut only has 85 midichlorians. So he's way far off from the Anakin's 20 over 20,000. I think that'll be the title. 85 midichlorians. That's it. Anyway. 85 midichlorians, right? I feel like I have at least like 7 or 8 midichlorians. Like I have to have some midichlorians. I believe in the Force, right? I'm one with
the
Force.
If that helps you sleep at night.
Yes, I do. Anyway, so talking about their relationship with each other. We did talk, you know, you mentioned it, that they were childhood friends and both joined the Guardians of the Whales, which is the order of a spiritual warrior monks. And they both became part of that. You know, they ended up joining up with the Rebels. They were part of, what's interesting is, Baze and Chirrut were, even though they were Guardians of the Whales, protectors of the temple, they also went ahead and ended up joining up with Saw Gerrera at some point. So he was part, they were part of the Partisans. Formerly, they were no longer part of it. So you actually get from some of the books and tie-in information. So that's not directly in Rogue One movie. But they do have a direct tie to Saw Gerrera, which was interesting for me when I read that information. So it is, you know, one of those things where these two friends have been through a lot together. Not only training, growing up together, protecting. They're both warriors. So obviously, especially if, you know, being blind, if he has to, you know, train and stuff like that, he definitely has honed his body and they've worked through a lot. But I, you know, like I said, I don't personally feel that their relationship is a romantic one. And I think if it was, I feel like Gareth Edwards and the team at Lucasfilm would have just kind of come out and shown it, at least in Rogue One, because they're pretty liberal on a lot of things here. In the new Star Wars film. So I would be surprised if they were, because I feel like they should have done it. A lot of the arguments I've read, and maybe you have something that would change my opinion here, Caitlin, it feels just almost like bad fan fiction of like the way they looked at him. I'm like, yeah, but that could have also just been acting. Like that's, you know, that's interpreting one thing of the character versus the way the characters interpreted the, you know, the character. You know, they looked at him, and I, you know, I'll tell you this, if my best friend was gunned down, I would be very upset about this too. Like I would too. And if you look at like Chewie's reaction to Han dying, you know, I would say it was the similar reaction. He went guns a-blazing and was really upset and went to, you know, if Han didn't fall to the abyss, I feel like Chewie would have grabbed and cradled him. And I don't think anyone would say that, oh, Chewie was a, you know, was in love with Han in a sexual way other than as a really close friend, you know, a brother.
Yeah, I don't think the argument is that friends wouldn't react that way if they watched their friend die. I think part of the problem is because there hasn't been a gay couple or romance in Star Wars, or at least not a canon one, at least in the movies and show, people are having to find it elsewhere.
And I'll agree with you that. Like, I think... they are, you know, I think it's easy to see that, but it's also the same thing, like, easy to see Poe and Finn, too, like,
yes, and bros, that's the
but
thing.
At the same time, like, the argument there is, like, well, look at, you know, Finn's reaction with Rey. It was something where it's, like, do you have a boyfriend, pretty boy, you know, cute boyfriend? Like, you know, obviously, there's something there, but it never really is explored, which is fine. Like, you don't need to explore romance everywhere. Not what Star Wars is.
I'd be fine if there's no romance, but I also feel like there's, like, I'm just worried that if they do romance, they're going to go down the stereotypical path again when there's other ways to go about it. Like, yeah, and it doesn't have to be these characters, like these two here or these two here, but essentially not having them is not acknowledging that that's a thing that can exist.
Yeah, no, and I think it can exist. And they did announce a gay Star Wars character in one of the novels. And I know we talked about it on this show, but it was a novel. Well, it wasn't one of the mainstream things.
That's why I said the show and the movies.
Yeah.
Because there was, I'm forgetting his name, but it was the book series we covered.
Was it in the Aftermath?
Aftermath.
Was it in the Aftermath series? Yeah. I'm trying to think about who it was. It was one of them. You know, yeah, we know who it is. It's somebody from Aftermath, if I remember correctly. And I just can't. It's, you know, skipping my mind. But, you know, the fact that we did have one that was openly, it was admitted in there. So it's not that it can't happen in this universe, if you will. But again, I just don't feel like Baze and Chirrut are romantically involved. I think they are best friends, and they definitely, the reactions that we see are there from that. Let us know what you guys think. Like, tweet at us, tell us what you think about a possible relationship between Baze and Chirrut. Do you think there is a relationship between them that is romantic, or is it just best friends or a deeper relationship tied to religion?
And put it this way, I wouldn't care if they went either way. Like,
yeah, I don't think
they love each other, whether it's sexual or friendship, but it's just because there is not that representation where there should be. I think people are trying to put it in there. His name is Singer Velas.
Yes, Singer. Singer.
Yes, I really liked him.
Yeah, and like I said, I agree with one of our Patreons has said, they feel that the relationship is ambiguous enough that there could be multiple interpretations that are all equally valid. And I agree, and I think that might be one of the reasons why they left it kind of ambiguous, because it really can be however you interpret it. So I just personally, like I said, I've looked at it and I've seen it multiple times, the film, and I just don't see it there, and I've read it and I just don't read it. But that's not to say that it's not there. But like, yes, you're right. Singer Velas from the Aftermath series was an open homosexual character. So that was, you know, it was nice to see that it is in the universe, but just not, you know, again, these two characters. So let us know what you think about it. And again, it is, everything is valid because it's all open to interpretation because we don't have anything directly there. Moving on between their relationship, what about the relationship with Jin and Cassian? I really enjoy that, like we talked about with Chirrut specifically, him able to see that Cassian, when they go to Edu, he's able to pick up that, you know, he was about, you know, that Cassian had an intention to possibly kill someone. Now, we know, obviously, because we've seen the film, that he doesn't kill somebody, that he ends up standing back and watching. And, of course, K2, I think, makes it worse by saying his gun was in the sniper configuration. What do you think about the relationship with Cassian?
I think we need to start off with the fact that, like, what pulled them, like, because ultimately, Chirrut's notice of Jin, who noticed him in the first, like, it's almost like she was magnetically pulled to him when he was talking. Yes, thank you. Pulled in when he was talking about the Force on the streets, and that's when he started talking to her, and that's when he, and then in turn, when they started fighting the stormtroopers, he stepped in to help them, and then that's what brought them together in the first place.
Yeah, and you know what's really interesting? These characters have been in plan for Rogue One for so long. If you remember, we talked about previously on another episode that Jin's mother was originally supposed to be a Jedi in early drafts of the film, and I feel like that is what actually tied Jin and Chirrut together, original link at some point in time, which obviously they got rid of. But of course, the Kyber crystal kind of replaced the Jedi link and stuff like that. So I feel like that the tying of the Guardian of the Wills and the Kyber crystal that Jin wears around her neck that her mother gave her, because again, her mother believed in the Jedi, believed in the Force, even though, you know, Jin had very little exposure to it being growing up in the Empire that kind of eradicated anything related to it. So I think it's really interesting that you're right. They were drawn together by a bigger destiny, if you will, which was maybe the Force that drew them together. So that brings them together. You know, that brings Jin and them together. And of course, Baze goes along because it's like, you know, he's not going to leave his bro alone. Or, you know, however you see them. But so Baze goes along, and I really find it interesting because at this point in time, and all the way up until till the very end of the film, you know, Chirrut even says that Baze has lost his belief in the Force. So what drew Chirrut and Jin together is not something that drew Baze to her at all. But Baze has actually even gone so far, and we'll talk about this in a second, has to get rid of the traditional Guardian of the Wills weapon to choose heavy repeating cannon, which is actually really cool, and I want to talk about his choice of weapon later on. But yeah, so like they're you have the unwilling kind of friend that goes along with it, that joins them. You have somebody who is drawn to it because of a specific element, which again is their kyber crystal, which brought him, and they obviously helped with the stormtrooper. And of course, you have them go to Saw Gerrera all together, which brings my favorite line. I think it's my favorite line from the movie. Turret saying, "Are you kidding me? I'm blind." They put a mask on him. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
He's blind already. Like, does he need the mask? Oh, well, boy.
Yeah, I did laugh at that one.
And that, I will say, Rogue One had its lines of funny stuff. Like, it really did. But yeah, so I guess the relationship with Jyn, which I guess was a deeper connection, probably tied to the Force or something that drew them together, forces them to have their relationship with Cassian be one of maybe mistrust, because they do see him kind of deceiving them once they escape. When they go to Edu, we have Churrit say that he's going to kill someone, and Bay's almost just not caring. He's like, well, that's his thing. They just wanted to get out of Jeddah once they got captured by Saw's guys, and then obviously Jeddah being destroyed by the Death Star. So I think, they're just kind of going along with it, willing to stay by, hang out with Bodhi, who I think, I wish we had more. I wish we had more story between, like, when Jyn and Cassian leave the ship and stuff like that, and we see Churrit and K2 and people stay behind. Like, I would love to see what the conversations were during that time when we don't see them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because I'm sure there was some, like, obviously, this is the problem with Star Wars fans. This is the problem with me and some of you who might be listening, is we think about these things, like, what did they say when the other people were gone? Did they end up, like, playing, Sabacc, or, like, go fish? Or did they end up, like, was there something that, like, happened that made them kind of,
what led them to make the decisions that they did?
That they did going further forward with it. That's what it is. But I do want to go through, like, their choice in weapons before we talk about their kind of last stands after that. Because these two are definitely supporting characters in our role at Rogue One. Similar to K2, how they kind of just stood around, stood in the background, but were very significant in our emotional heartstrings to see what the crew of Rogue One did. We talked about how Bodhi died was pretty significant. Like, without him, they wouldn't have been able to complete the transmission to it. But also, if it wasn't for Churrit and Baze, they wouldn't have been able to actually activate the master transmitter for Bodhi to actually be able to transmit those plans. So these guys were very critical in completing their mission, but they were definitely the second tier characters compared to Jyn and Cassian, which we're going to get to Jyn probably next week. So I want to dive into their weapon before they do this. So Baze has a weapon of choice is the repeating cannon, specifically the MWC 35C repeating cannon. And the official one is that Baze Malbus has abandoned the ancient ways of the Guardians of the Wills, taking up an inelegant weapon of a less civilized age. A little throwback to A New Hope. His Staccato Lightning repeating cannon uses a belt of galvan circuitry and a refrigerant tank to deliver the equivalent of 5 laser rifles worth of destructive firepower, making Baze a one-man wrecking crew in battle and an agent of retribution for the Empire's evils. So this kind of gives you an idea of, like, the weapon he chose. Now, regardless of his personality, we saw this when, after, Churrit does this awesome, like, kung fu, non-Jedi, Jedi-type moves against the stormtroopers, and then you have a series of, was it 4 or 5 stormtroopers come out, Baze just goes, boom, and kills all of them. Because that's awesome. So what do you think of Baze's choice of weapon here?
Well, one, it's badass. Two, all I can think is what happens when the refrigerant tank stops working.
Well, we never have to find that out, because he dies before it happens.
Oh, that's just sad.
Too soon? Too soon, maybe? No?
Too soon. Okay. And then the third thing is, how awesome of a water gun would that be?
Dude, that would be the coolest water gun ever. Like, it's summer right now. How do we not have the Baze Malbus water gun? Like, that'd be a full water tank in it. Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah, I know, Lucasfilm, right?
Disney, where are you at with these toys? Like, honestly. The base Malbus water gun would be awesome, like Super Soaker style.
Copyright
that
by Caitlin.
That would be really cool. That would be so odd. Oh, man. And see, now I can't even... I'm going to continue on. Let's focus again. Let's focus again, Mikey. Come on. We're talking about Bace's weapon here. So I find it really interesting because, again, when we talked about the religion earlier, we talked about Churrit being the person to, you know, the person that joins. And you, in your head canon, Bace is like, eh, sure, I got nothing better to do. I'll go with you and join the Guardians of the Wills. But, you know, Churrit said this guy lost his way. You know, and I don't know if it's just, you know, his choice of weapon, which is obviously an elegant weapon for a less civilized age. It's not the staff. It's not his, the light bow. But it's one of those things where it is definitely a more crude weapon, similar to Han and his blaster, compared to Luke and Obi-Wan's lightsaber, which is definitely a little bit more elegant weapon. I will say, it makes for Bae to be more of a you know, person to be reckoned with, if you will, like when it comes to, you know, the battle that we see on Scarif. And it really does tend to it. You know, he takes, you know, again, they make the 10 guys feel like 100, which is really, really awesome. And I feel Bae plays into that.
And I feel like in a different way of wording it, it's a very destructive weapon for a very destructive world that they've come to know, but for all its firepower, he doesn't get trigger happy with it.
Mm-mm. He doesn't. He's very selective on how he uses it. I will say, it almost feels like his weapon is an extension of his feelings. Like, yes, he is angry at the world. He's chosen not to use an elegant weapon, and he uses something that is absolutely devastating.
Well, and I know when they blow up, or not blow up, but like the Death Star comes and destroys Jedha, and he has that quote, like, they destroyed our home, I'll kill them. But I feel like that's been his sentiment for a while, like since the Temple of Kyber has been destroyed. I feel like that's generally been his sentiment, which is why he has the weapon he does.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's one of those things where, like, he has stepped away from what he was originally taught, and he's chosen something that will make him a force to be reckoned with, regardless of what happens. And it's really nice to see him at his end. You know, it's not nice to see that he died, but it's to see him at his end having, I guess, you know, kind of, you know, gone back with his faith. Because his last words are, the Force is with me and I am one with the Force. Those are the last words of Bae's Malbus, which is also what Churrit said before he passed. He was killed also. The nice part about, I will say, about his weapon was able to take on everyone, all the Death Troopers that were shooting at Churrit and eventually got him. That weapon allowed him to kill every Death Trooper. I will say, I'm a little disappointed in all the deaths of Rogue One. His is the least favorite of mine. Bae's is the least favorite. Because if you watch Rogue One, I don't know if you remember it clearly how he died, Caitlin, is he killed all the Death Troopers, including the one that killed him. And it was the death of that last Death Trooper as he fell down and dropped the grenade that rolled over to him. I do feel that, like, he gave up in the end, but I think he was ready to go because, again, his friend just passed away. He was one with the Force. You know, the Force is with me and I'm one with the Force. Like, he had gone back to his beliefs. But I will say that was the weakest death to me, was Bae's Malbus's death, because it was, he'd killed it. He had won. If he had simply ran away, like, he might have survived or gotten injured and lived. He would have still died when, you know, the Death Star blew everything up. But
not much longer.
But that death was reserved exclusively for Rey and, or for, not Rey, for Jin and Cassian. So I get it, but I was a little disappointed in Bae's.
And it wasn't, he would never run away with Churrit still there.
That's true. Well, but that's the thing, is Churrit wasn't there. Churrit had passed away already. Churrit had died, and he was there next to Churrit as Churrit, you know, took his last breath. You know, we'll come back to Churrit's weapons in a minute, but let's talk about Churrit's death, and since we're talking about the death of Bae's. You know, Churrit's death was, you know, was heroic in the sense to me. Like, it was one of those things where you have someone like Bodhi saying, we need someone to flip the master switch. You have the unknown rebel guy going, I'm going! And then as soon as he steps out, gets killed. And so then Chirrut takes his staff, holding it straight up and forward, goes, "The Force is with me. I am one with the Force." Back and forth, his repeating mantra. And he gets all the way to it and then is able to flip the switch. Like, he, without Chirrut, I don't think that, I don't know if anyone would have been able to make it all the way to that master control switch and flip it so Bodhi can get his message out. So that way Jin and Cassian can transmit the plans.
I know it was near the beginning of meeting them, we knew that Baze had lost his faith, but I don't think it was until he watched Chirrut walk across there unharmed that he truly gained it back. And it wasn't till he gained it back that, because if Chirrut wasn't there, Baze wouldn't have walked across and done that himself, even though he had the weapon to protect himself doing it.
He did it right after Chirrut did it. So,
he wouldn't have had the faith that he was capable.
It's like I said, I feel like Chirrut's death was a little bit more heroic, and Baze's was just like, okay, now we need to kill him too a little bit. Don't get me wrong, Baze, I think, is an awesome character, and that weapon is the coolest thing ever. It's like a Ghostbuster backpack meets Star Wars laser cannon, which is really cool. But I do feel like Chirrut is a little bit more meaningful in what it accomplished. I don't know. That's just my opinion on it. But I do want to... Go, Caitlin.
No. Go ahead.
All right. But I do want to talk about Chirrut's choice in weapons real quick. So Chirrut actually has two different weapons. He has the light... he has a staff, which is something he used to help him actually kind of walk around. It's a blind man's walking stick. But it's a very deadly weapon in his hand. The really cool part is one end is capped with an enclosure for a kyber crystal, offering a symbolic source of inner illumination. So, if you think about this, this is almost like the walking stick Yoda would have used in Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. And I guess in the Clone Wars, he had it, as his cane, and I guess in the prequels too, but it was probably more apparent in the original trilogy. So I feel like this is exactly what it is. This is a very religious piece as well as being functional. What do you think about his staff?
Well, staffs generally, it depends on what, mythology or, fantastical world you're in. But I've also seen it's where it's a double standard. It's more for not passive aggressive, but the people who prefer a more peace keeping method. And when all else fails, that's when they pull out this, they can use it as a weapon.
Yeah, no, they do. I see the staff, and I come from a background where my father did martial arts for a long time. He's a 6-degree black belt in Hapkido. And at that level, a lot of the weapons and training that you get, because they assume you to be older, my dad is very deadly when it comes to using a cane. He doesn't actually walk with a cane, but I helped him as he was training with it. And you're right, it's one of those things where it's meant as a defensive mechanism. It's a tool, there's a functionality to it. It is, at first glance, a blind man's walking stick, Chirrut Emway's staff. But in the hands of this Guardian of the Wheels warrior, this person who's trained for years to protect, his religion, to protect the temple of the Kyber, it becomes a deadly weapon. And you're right, it is something where it's meant to, if someone was to attack, it's meant to protect yourself and not disable, but to stop the situation without causing permanent harm. It's not like a blaster. It's a little bit more elegant weapon. And this goes hand in hand with his other weapon, which is the light bow. So the light bow is similar in the sense it can be used as a staff. It's a little bit slower, but it's very similar to the bowcasters built on Kashyyyk by the Wookiees. It kind of marries a lot of the handcraft stuff with technology to create a weapon that's more powerful than just a heavy rifle. And you can actually see him using it, kind of like Chewbacca used the blasters in, or his bowcaster, and Han Solo say, "I like this," when he shot the stormtroopers and it affected four or five of them. You see Chirrut able to use a single shot, take out, multiple stormtroopers at once. So, the light bow is a little bit more of a slower weapon than what Baze's shooting five bolts right away. But it's a little bit more, it packs a little bit bigger punch, if you will.
But also I think it matches Turret's personality in it's slower, but it gives you time to think rather. Not that, like I said before, Baze wasn't trigger happy by any means, but it causes you to think before you actually shoot.
Yeah.
It is slower.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's definitely slower, and it's definitely more personality. So, and these were traditional weapons of the Guardians of the Wills, so it's really nice to see the two different sides to it. You know, someone who's lost their way and someone who clings to the old ways, you know, almost, you know, to a detriment, which causes his death.
I was going
to
say, religiously?
Yeah, religiously. Well, I will say this, and I lost my train of thought earlier when we moved on to the weapons, was, you know, when you have someone like Turret who uses these weapons and then has his faith so strong, you know, saying he's one with the Force is with me, and he walks out and he doesn't get hit by a single stormtrooper. I don't know how much that is the Force versus just stormtroopers can't hit anything. So, you know, it is one of those things where it's like, we have this, you know, there's this idea that stormtroopers are a bad shot.
But when it's plot specific,
they can. But when it's a slow-moving blind man walking towards a very obvious target, they can't hit him. I'm just saying, they can't hit a slow-moving man.
Yeah, well, because they hit the guy who went before him or tried before him.
Instantly. So, yeah. All in all, Baze and Turret, I will say, are critical to the story of Rogue One. Gives us a lot of insight to the Guardian of the Wills, and I would love to have more experience, more information about the Guardian of the Wills and more characters like them. Specifically because of that, when we talked about Guardian of the Wills at the beginning, their religion, you have that unfilmed scene from Revenge of the Jedi, or Revenge of the Sith, not Revenge of the Jedi, that was the original Return of the Jedi title. But for Revenge of the Sith, that unfilmed scene between Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan talking about learning from the Shaman of the Wills. I think that's just really, really interesting.
Well, especially with what George Lucas originally planned for the series in terms of the Force versus the Wills. Because the way that information was worded, it sounded almost like the Wills was like the Bendu, or do you remember the, I forget the name of it, but in
Clone Wars.
Clone Wars, when they end up on that mysterious planet and they try getting Anakin.
There's the brother and the sister, but there's the father. Yeah, and I feel like it's interesting, like those aspects of the Force, like that lore stuff. I feel like some of that's going to come out in The Last Jedi, just because of what we've heard, where it's like we're going to see stuff and it's going to take a turn to something we didn't know. So I think Star Wars fans who are like hardcore Star Wars fans, like people who listen to this podcast and other Star Wars podcasters, won't be too surprised. But people who are casual Star Wars watchers who've watched all the films and are fans, but that's just kind of as far as they take it. You know, they're not like me who have Yoda tattooed on their leg and stuff like that. You know, we're hardcore Star Wars fans, people. You're listening to us here. But, you know, we're dissecting random characters from the different films and cartoons and stuff like that. But I don't think we'll be surprised with The Last Jedi, because I feel like The Last Jedi is going to dive into this lore. And I'm really hoping some of the tie-in books will let us explore it more.
Well, and also, because as you mentioned, like, in those scenes, they talk about, like, the Journal of the Wills, like, and we talked, I think you guys, I don't know if I was on that episode, when the teaser came out, and we saw those books.
Yeah, we saw this trailer, and there was the books that were on the shelf, and specifically the one book with the old Jedi Knight.
Symbol
on it. There is a line, so I have the Force Awakens novelization here, which is interesting. So the very first line in the Star Wars Force Awakens novelization comes from the Journal of the Wills, and there's a number tied to it and everything. So think of it as like a Bible verse, if you will. So here, I'm going to read it to you. First comes the day, then comes the night, after the darkness shines through the light. The difference, they say, is only made right by resolving of gray through refined Jedi sight. Journal of the Wills, 7477. So this blurb right here is super tight. It's super short, all right? And it's an interesting thing that we saw in the Force Awakens novelization. And then we had Rogue One that introduced, you know, these characters from the Guardians of the, you know, we have the Guardians of the Wills novel. We got you know, we have two characters that are part of the Wills, so, you know, that were guardians of the Wills. This is really interesting. And like I said, we have The Last Jedi tying into things that people say it's going to go places where we just never expect it to go. So I feel like the Wills and learning this lore is going to be something we're going to see more and more. And I feel like tying into Baze and Churrit and their religion and what is the Temple of Kyber, like all these things are going to be tied into something much more that we're going to learn. And like I said, I really hope we're going to see much more of these things explored. If we want to do a theory episode, you know, we can talk all day about Shattered Empire and the forest tree that Luke takes with Shara Bay from, you know, the Emperor's, you know, area. And guess what? Luke is living in this tree and he's in exile. Like, how do we know that's not the forest tree that we saw in Clone Wars that was taken from the Jedi Temple that the Emperor had? Like, this is all the same forest tree that Yoda meditated under and Guardians, you know, like this is the lore that we want. And I feel like Baze and Churrit are entwined into it. And I think they also were a clue maybe to see what we're going to see. They kind of help set it up, if you will. I don't know. Like, I feel like getting this in the novelization and then Rogue One coming out and we have characters that are so entwined with the religion of the Jedi Force. And then we'll see what happens in The Last Jedi. I don't want to go too far into this off topic, but do you agree with me a little bit, Caitlin, or no?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. I love the theorizing, so I'm like, ugh. Okay.
Yeah. So oh. I will say, if you haven't seen some of the Clone Wars episodes, definitely check them out. The one we are talking about, there's a couple different ones, but the one we are talking about, you can just Google, is the story of Anakin and the brother, sister, and the father, which is Manifestations of the Force. There are three episodes, the final three episodes of the Clone Wars called Voices, Destiny, and Sacrifice deal with Qui-Gon Jinn and a little bit of what we've been talking about, him coming back. And then obviously the Shaman of the Wills was mentioned in the screenplay for Revenge of the Sith. So there's a lot of things tied to Baze and Churrit's Guardian of the Wills, you know, their religion, Guardians of the Temple of Kyber and stuff like that. Anything we skipped over, we haven't talked about with Churrit or Baze, Caitlin?
No, I think we covered everything.
We talked a lot about these two guys. So thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @rradiopodcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/resistanceradiopodcast. Remember to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. As always, I'm Mikey B.
And I'm Caitlin.
And I'm one with the Force, and the Force is with me. Ah, you can't say it! May the Force be with you.
And also with you.